Take heed to yourself and to your doctrine. Welcome back to the Hackberry House, a daily podcast devoted to the Word of God and the persecuted church. My name is Bob. This is podcast number 180. It's June the 8th, 2015. Well, today we begin a series of three messages from the work of Robert Traill, 17th century Scotland. You ever heard of him? I had never heard of him. I'm sorry, but someone sent this message to me. It seemed like a good one for you. It was for me. And I'd like to share it with you, Robert Traill. But let me tell you a little bit about Robert Traill so that you'll know who you're listening to. Born in Scotland in May 1642. Now, this information is available easily by anyone online. He studied his preparatory studies for ministry, sent to the College of Edinburgh. He distinguished himself there in several classes, devoted his life to the ministry and the cause of the church of his fathers. This devotion was manifested at least one point in his life by his attendance, that is, his assistance in the helping of a Mr. James Guthrie. He was a minister in Stirling. I'm assuming that's Scotland too. And he went to be martyred. And Robert Traill was there with him and took part in all of that, blessing him, not part of the victimizers. That was in 1661. Then 5 years later, he had to pay his own price because they found in his house some books. And several copies, actually, of one book called The Apologetical Relation. And it just, I don't know anything about the book, except that the prevailing church government of that time hated the book. They were against the book. And in those days, if the government didn't like a book, since the government was run by the church, the government church, just like in Romanism, unfortunately, they could come in and do whatever they needed to do. So he was condemned by that council that ruled in his town, condemned to the flames. He was condemned, but he never went to the flames. He was condemned when he found out the sentence of the court. He went into hiding with his mother and his brother. It's reported that he joined up with the Covenanters. I can't go into all of that history. Unfortunately, in those days, it was considered a spiritual thing to take up arms and to fight for your faith. Of course, we have never been taught that in the scriptures, to use the sword to hurt other people like Rome did. But, you know, these were children of Rome. They were just coming out. They didn't understand fully yet that you can win by fighting in the spirit. So he took up arms with them, thinking he was doing God's service. Unfortunately, that little skirmish didn't end too well. They were routed at a particular place. Because of this, he had to run away from the country. He finds himself in Holland. His dad's already there, 1667. A couple years later, he comes back to London and starts a ministry there. 1677, he visits Scotland. He's arrested again. He is arraigned before the council. He refuses to clear himself by their unlawful oath and was, upon little evidence, sentenced to imprisonment on the Bass Rock. He was released, though, after 3 months and returned to London, where he continued to officiate as a pastor of a Presbyterian congregation until he died in 1716. So here's a man who understood the price of being in the ministry and wanted those who followed him to take this seriously. So he writes this message, a sermon, it's called By What Means May Ministers Best Win Souls? Now, he does address it to pastors, that kind of person, leadership people in the church, but by implication, anyone can take these things to heart. He gives a little bit for the non-pastors at the very, very end of the message, but perhaps you can keep your own minister in mind or your own ministry in mind as you're listening to these words. This will come in three parts. We'll do part one today. In fact, let's do it right now. This reading is Robert Trail's sermon on By What Means May Ministers Best Win Souls. We quote from the King James Bible, "Take heed unto thyself and unto thy doctrine. Continue in them, for in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee." 1 Timothy 4:16. The words are a substantial part of the good counsel and direction the apostle giveth unto Timothy, and in him unto all the ministers of the gospel. In them are two things. One, a threefold duty laid on gospel ministers. Take heed unto thyself and unto thy doctrine. Continue in them. Two, a double advantage consequent upon the discharge of this duty. For in doing this thou shalt both save thyself and them that hear thee. First, the minister's duty is in three things here. First, take heed unto thyself. Thou art set in a high office, in a dangerous place. Take good and narrow heed. Look well to thyself, thy heart, and thy way. Second, take heed unto thy doctrine. Though thou be ever so well gifted and approved both of God and men, though thou be an extraordinary officer, as Timothy was, yet take heed unto thy doctrine. These two we pass at present, because we shall resume them at greater length when we take their help to the resolving of this question. Third, continue in them. This hath relation, it appears, unto verse 12 and 15, as well as unto the preceding part of this verse. I shall dismiss this part of the verse with these. First, continue in thy work. Thou who art a minister, it is a work for thy lifetime, and not to be taken up and laid down again, according as it may best suit a man's carnal inclinations and outward conveniences. The apostles that labored with their hands have, by that example, set the conscience of a minister at liberty to provide for the necessities of this life by other employments, when he cannot live of the gospel. Yet certainly no man that is called of God to this work can with a safe conscience abandon it wholly. Paul, for example, rather than necessity, both preached and wrought in a handicraft. As preaching doth not make working unlawful, so neither should any other business of a minister make preaching to cease. Number two, continue in endeavors after greater fitness for thy work. No attainments in fitness and qualifications for this work can free a man of the obligation that lies on him to increase and grow therein more and more. It's not enough that a man study and be painful ere he enter into the ministry, but he must labor still to be more fit for his great work. Number three, continue in thy vigor and painfulness and diligence. Young ministers that are sound and sincere before God are usually warm and diligent in the first years of their ministry, and many do decline afterwards and become more cold and remiss. This exhortation is a check thereunto. Continue in them. Well, next, the second thing in the word is the double advantage proposed to encourage ministers to this hard duty. First, thou shalt save thyself. Thy own salvation shall be promoted and secured thereby. How becoming is it for a minister to mind his own salvation, and to mind it so heartily as to be animated from the hopes of it unto the greater diligence in his ministry? But how doth faithfulness in the ministry of the gospel further the minister's salvation? Well, first, faithfulness in a man's generation work is of great use and advantage to salvation. Well done, good and faithful servant, from the Lord's own mouth is a great security. And diligence and faithfulness in improving the talents we are entrusted with through grace procure that testimony. Secondly, thou shalt save thyself from the guilt of other men's sins and ruin, if thou be faithful in the ministry. Thou hast delivered or saved thy soul, saith the Lord, to the prophet in the case of unsuccessful faithfulness. And so Paul, Acts 18:6, I am clean. Your blood be upon your own heads. In Acts 20, 26 and 27, I take you to record this day that I am pure from the blood of all men, for I have not shunned to declare unto you all the counsel of God. Every minister pledgeth his soul to God that he shall be a faithful servant, and he that is such may freely take up his stake, whatever his success on others be. Thirdly, faithfulness and painfulness in the ministry of the gospel promotes a man's own salvation, insofar as the work of Christianity is woven in with the right discharge of the office of the ministry. Many ministers can say that if they had not been ministers, they had, in all appearance, lost their souls. The subject of the minister's work is the same with that of a Christian's. And above all, men should be careful of his heart and intentions, that all be pure and spiritual. No man, in any work he is called to, is under so strict a necessity of dependence on the influence and assistance of the Holy Ghost, both for gifts and grace. And are not all these great helps unto our own salvation? The second advantage is, thou shalt save them that hear thee. There's little hope of that man's being useful to save others that minds not his own salvation. And therefore the apostle puts them in this order, thyself, and then them that hear thee. This description of the people, them that hear thee, saith that the principal work of a minister is preaching, and the principal benefit people have by them is to hear the Lord's word from them. Though there be a seeing, that is, of their holy conversation, that is also useful. But the apostle knew no such ministers as were only to be seen in worldly pomp and grandeur, and seldom or never heard preaching. Thou shalt save them. The great end of both preaching and hearing is salvation. And if salvation were more designed by preachers and hearers, it would be more frequently the effect of the action. Thou shalt save them. Thou shalt, by the Lord's blessing on thy ministry, be successful in converting sinners and in building up of saints in holiness and faith unto salvation. Not that ministers are of themselves able, by all their endeavors, to carry on this great end. They are only God's tools and instruments, as in 1 Corinthians 3, verses 6 and 7. Concerning this, first we find that the Lord has appointed this great ordinance of the gospel ministry for this end, the saving of men. It is through their word that men believe, and divine appointment of the means declares both it to be useful and the end to be hopeful. Second, he hath also given many promises of his presence, blessing, and success to follow and attend them whom he sends on this great errand. Christ's first calling of the apostles had this promise in it, I will make you fishers of men, which not only declared what that employment was that he called them unto, but it assured them of success in it. At his leaving of them, he promised to be with them unto the end of the world, Matthew 28:20. And this promise is as good to us as it was to them. Three, he has also revealed much of his mind about ministers' duty in order to this end of saving men. This also makes the end more hopeful. Four, we find that the Lord doth qualify and fit them whom he makes successful. He makes men able ministers of the New Testament, the Word of Life. 2 Corinthians 3, 5 and 6. And still, according to the success the Lord has a mind to bless a man with, gifts and qualifications and assistance are proportionately given. The apostles that had the greatest harvest to gather in were made the strongest laborers. And though in a far inferior degree, the same method is observed by the Lord in dealing with and by ordinary ministers. It is true that always the most able and learned ministers are not most successful, yet generally the most skillful laborers are most blessed. Neither are the most learned and able men for parts most fit and skillful in dealing with souls at all times. Now, having opened the words, we shall return to the question to be resolved. By what means may ministers best win souls? In speaking to which, I shall first show what this text says to this purpose, and then, second, give some further account thereof from other scriptures, and third, apply it both to ministers and other people. First, what this text speaks about this matter. It looks two ways upon this question. First, it gives a direct answer to it and points forth duty. And second, it gives an encouraging promise of the good effect and fruit of the discharge of the duty. I shall carry on both together. First, take heed unto thyself. Wouldst thou be a saved and successful minister? Take heed unto thyself. Such warnings imply always a case of difficulty and danger wherein he is that gets them. Take heed unto thyself in these things. 1. Take heed that thou be a sound and sincere believer. The importance of sincere godliness in a minister is written in the deep wounds that the Church of Christ hath received by the hands of ungodly ministers. It's been made a question whether an ungodly man can be a minister, but it is none that such men are in a most desperate condition. Depart from me, not because you ran unsent or preached error instead of truth or preached poorly and meanly, which are all great sins in themselves, but because you work iniquity. The usual expression of entire ungodliness. What use the Lord may make of the gifts, for great gifts he gives to the worst of men, of ungodly men, even in the ministry of the gospel, is one of his deep paths. But no man can reasonably imagine that a walker in the way to hell can be a fit and useful guide to them that mind to go to heaven. If a man would have peace in his conscience and success in his work of the ministry, let him take good heed to this, that he be a sound Christian. There's a special difficulty for a minister to know his grace. Gifts and grace have deceived many with their likeness, although the difference be great, both in itself and to an enlightened eye. To take heed to thyself, that thou be called and sent minister, a called and sent minister. This is of great importance as to success. He that can say, Lord, thou hast sent me, may boldly add, Lord, go with me and bless me. It's good when a man is serious in this inquiry. It's to be feared that many run and never ask this question. And so it is seen in their speed and success, I sent them not. Therefore they shall not profit this people at all. Jeremiah 23:32. It's a standing rule to this day. These things, if found, may serve to satisfy a minister's conscience that Jesus Christ hath sent him. All right, those are the words of Robert Traill in his message entitled, By What Means May Ministers Best Win Souls? Tomorrow, among other things, he's going to share with you how it is you can know that God has sent you into a particular ministry. And he talks about other things too. He's very serious. In fact, as the message progresses, he gets more and more serious and specific and helpful, I think, about this whole thing of being called to the ministry and winning souls as a minister. I hope you'll be with me then. Thank you for tuning in. Don't forget what we started with, 1 Timothy 4:16. Take heed to yourself and to your doctrine.